Welcome to the Voice of the Winged Ox, the official podcast of St. Luke's Episcopal Church in Jamestown, New York. I'm your host, Rev Merrill.
And I'm Eric Williams, rector of St. Luke's Church in Jamestown.
And we are here today at the Labyrinth Cafe on 4th Street between Pine and North Main across from St. Luke's, and we are having the first of what we hope is a regular feature on the Voice of the Winged Ox, which will be talking about different topics of interest, particularly to St. Luke's, but to seekers and Christians in general. Today's topic is having a personal relationship with God. And I thought what we would do first is have Father Eric describe why this topic is important for us today.
The church, St. Luke's, has been in a process over the last few months called natural church development. And natural church development is a church growth theory and practice developed by a German man named Christian Schwartz, who looks at the Christian life and church growth and says, you know, so many of the things we look at are very simplistic answers. We need a more theological approach and we need a more comprehensive approach. And so he has identified 8 quality characteristics that all growing churches in any denomination in any continent of the world all have. They all have these 8 things. One of them is passionate spirituality. You do a survey in your church and you discover which are your top and bottom areas of these 8 quality characteristics. And it so happened that our lowest score, the one we've chosen to work on over this coming year, is passionate spirituality. And as we thought about what is passionate spirituality, what does it really mean? Many of the survey questions and answers that seem to be the areas that we wanted to work on the most and that seem to be a signal to us related not so much to the church's functioning as a community, but to the individuals who make up that community. What motivates the individual in their Christian faith and life? And the issue that kept coming up again and again in different ways was a thirst, a hunger for a personal relationship with God. That this seemed to be a primary factor without which nothing else could really happen. That if you didn't have a community of individuals who were motivated in their relationship with God, then none of these other great things like evangelism or small groups or any of the rest would happen, because the inner motivation wouldn't be there. So that's the one we've chosen to work on, and that's why we decided that we would look at this particular issue this morning and really explore a little bit together what is a personal relationship with God. How does it happen? Where does it start? What are its characteristics?
Well, what do we mean when we say, I want or I have a personal relationship with God?
The first thing I think of is a kind of a cliche for Christian evangelism, where you're walking along and someone buttonholes you and says, have you accepted Jesus Christ as your personal Lord and Savior? And I always thought, boy, that would be kind of neat that if I had Jesus in my pocket and he was my personal Lord and Savior, I have a little leash for him and we could walk along together. I think it's more than that simplistic, sort of notch in the gun belt theory of evangelism. I think a personal relationship with God is about the mystery of a relationship. Just like any human relationship is a mystery that unfolds. My wife and I have been married for 13 years, and we are still discovering things about each other. We're still coming across mysteries of the other's personality. And I think a personal relationship with God is very much like that, that we are engaged in a relationship of love with someone else. And in this case, the someone else is that mysterious person that we call by many names, but who is the author of all life, the creator of the universe. And in that mysterious relationship, we continue to learn and to grow, to learn things about ourselves and to learn things about God. and to grow in the mystery of that loving relationship.
So what you are saying, and I guess I am saying possibly by implication of not disagreeing with you, is, first of all, that a personal relationship with God is possible. There are those that argue that it is not. So that it is possible. And I guess the second part is that not only is it possible, but it is something that both sides of this relationship, both God and I, want.
Let me go back a little bit in time. When I was 13 years old, I went through the world's most boring confirmation class in the Episcopal Church I grew up in.
Is that what it was titled? The world's most...
Sadly, no. But we would sit in the pastor's office and the rector's office. He was a Harvard PhD and a very brilliant man who preached very dense theological sermons and taught a very dense theological confirmation class. And at the end of this class, after several months, we were presented to the bishop at a big service at the cathedral in Los Angeles, and we were confirmed. And when the bishop laid hands on my head, and when I was confirmed, something really happened to me that I consider my own sort of mini conversion experience. I had grown up in the church, I had always believed in God, but in my prayers and in my thoughts, I was sort of addressing these prayers out into the great vacuum. I had been taught to believe in God, but I wouldn't say at that point as a child that I had a real personal relationship with God, at least not one that I was really consciously aware of. But at the moment of my confirmation, something happened that I've never forgotten. At that moment, I felt an inner sense that this person that I had been addressing prayers to for all these years, going to church to meet, was no longer just an abstract idea, but in fact was a real person. And I realize the language we use about God can be problematic, but I'm going to use the word person here because this was a being that had an identity that I realized at that moment knew me and loved me and had been wanting a relationship with me for all this time. And it was the most amazing feeling for me because it totally changed the way that I looked at my faith. Suddenly, my faith was no longer something to learn about abstractly, to go to classes, to become an expert in, but it was about a journey of getting to know this other person. So yes, I would say in my life and experience, a personal relationship is possible, and that it's not so much that I seek that out, but that I believe God is seeking that out for each of us, that God wants that relationship with each one of us, and that at some point in our lives, for whatever reason, whatever the factors are, we may be able to turn just enough to really experience and acknowledge and reciprocate that yearning on the part of God. And that's what happened to me, I think, at that confirmation moment.
Yeah, I have experienced that real sense that God is hankering after this relationship with me just as much as I have for many, many years, long before I joined the church or thought of myself as a Christian. I mean, that was something that I wanted, was this relationship. And it's only much later that I've realized it wasn't like I was pulling on God's coattail saying, you know, excuse me, could you pay attention? I'm over here. You know, it was really the reverse in many ways. You know, my own hankering was, you know, one of the ways God was getting at me to say, could you pay attention? Could you listen up? Could you hear me speaking to you? So, if you're thinking about then a community of people, in this case St. Luke's, having this personal relationship with God. I mean, what, I guess, for lack of a better word, and I don't like this word, what are the benefits? It sounds so catechetical. What are the benefits of this? But what can we share with people, since we both sort of come clean about this, that we believe we have a relationship with God? What's that like for you?
I was reading just this week in the latest Newsweek magazine. And we're talking on September 5th, I think it is today's date. I was just reading an article about Mother Teresa, and there have been some interesting papers released about her own spiritual crisis, or journey, I guess you would say. Now, we would lift up Mother Teresa, most of us, as a shining example of the spiritual life, of someone who totally dedicated herself to that personal relationship with God and lived that out in a life of incredible service to the poor in Calcutta. But it appears from these writings and from the word of her confessor that she struggled mightily with this relationship with God. And so I first want to say that I think it's not so simple, and that's why the notch in the belt theory is so problematic for me. You know, have you accepted Jesus as your personal Lord and Savior? Seems for many people to be the end of the story.
Right, you know, that on September 5th at 9:24 in the morning, whatever time it is.
You know, you got saved.
You know, I was saved, end of story. You know, almost end of spiritual life.
Right, end of doubt, end of conversation, end of growth. You weren't one day, and then you were the next. And for Mother Teresa, at least, this was a lifelong struggle of a passionate desire to know God. She wrote really poignantly of moments in her younger life where she felt so close to God. And then in her later life, a lot of times when she felt abandoned by God. And I think about those words of Jesus on the cross, quoting Psalm 22, my God, why have you forsaken me? And I think that part of this relationship is about struggling with the absence of God as well. That in my walk with God, in my personal relationship, there are also times of what are called barrenness or dryness, or, you know, the long dark night of the soul, as St. John of the Cross wrote. And these have to be taken seriously. And we have to ask, well, what is that about? Is it that Mother Teresa was weak in her faith? That she was, you know, clearly not as spiritual as everybody thought? And that seems to be what some people are writing and thinking. And I think that's entirely wrong. Remember the story told of St. Teresa of Avila, where after a really rough day, she got knocked off her horse and she was lying in a mud puddle. And she looked up into heaven and said, Lord, if this is how you treat your friends, it's no wonder you have so few. And I think sometimes it may be, and this is my own personal theory, it may be that for those who are called to grow in this relationship with God, much as a parent begins to disengage sometimes from an adolescent in order to further their growth, that God, who has had such an intimate, close relationship with us for a period of time, may choose to step back, may choose to let us live without that tangible presence which kind of carries us along, because there may be something worthwhile in us striving for a little bit in that dryness, in that difficult time. And that perhaps that's what God was doing with Mother Teresa. I don't know that for sure, but I think it may be a more complex picture than we would like to think sometimes.
Well, In my experience, a lot of what goes on in my relationship really has to do with me. And it has to do with what I'm willing to put on the table in the relationship. I'm really challenged to be fully present. You know, there's a whole lot of stuff going on that's real distracting in life. I don't know if it's being picked up on the recording, but the dog is here with me, and he's been bouncing around because we've got crumbs. and not only our crumbs, but other people's crumbs from this being a coffee shop. So there's a real way in which if I try to sit down quietly, I immediately have a dog in my lap. A dog in my lap with a bone. A dog in my lap trying to get me to pay attention to this dog. And although that's pretty egregious, I mean, pretty obvious, there's lots going on to distract me from my relationship with God. So that's external. And internal, I'd really like to operate under God's radar. You know, like, if you don't know I'm doing this stuff, or you don't know I'm thinking this stuff, or whatever, I don't have to engage about this. But as soon as I begin to settle down for some serious silent time, and that's how I do this, you know, getting in touch with God, is to sit down and purposefully say, okay, I'm listening. So, God, I'm paying attention to what you have to say. What starts happening is stuff I don't even know is going on in my life starts bubbling up to the surface. And it's like, so, we're going to deal with this. Or I get a real clear sense of where God is taking me. And I'm like, oh, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to investigate that. I don't want to deal with this. So it's a whole lot easier for me to keep this relationship far more distant, far more on the acquaintance level than on that deep, serious conversational level.
I think that's a really good point. And I think it's one of the reasons why our, as a congregation, that was an issue for us and why we've chosen this area to work on, because I think that's true for most of us, myself included, that as much as I desire that closeness with God, it's also a frightening thing, because it may mean change, it may mean transformation, it may pull me in a direction that I don't want to go in, it may mean admitting that I'm not in charge of my life, and that I'm not in as much control as I'd like to think I am. All of that is kind of scary. You also mentioned silence, and you'd asked earlier, what are the benefits of, as a congregation, focusing on passionate spirituality, on the individual spiritual lives of our members? And I think it's worth saying, we often think that there is one answer to a problem. Like, if we want to grow as Christians, then we all have to be cookie-cutter Christians. We all have to follow the same way, do the same things, experience God in the same ways. And one of the things I really like about natural church development and Christian Swartz's approach to this is that he explicitly says, when talking about passionate spirituality, that there is not one right kind of piety. There are some people for whom jumping up and down with tambourines, speaking in tongues, you know, that's the way to go, the sort of exuberant Pentecostal spirit of many churches, is a form of piety that is valid, that is helpful to thousands, millions of people, but it's not the only way. There's also in our Christian tradition and heritage centering prayer, silence, meditation. There are labyrinth walks. There's Ignatian spirituality, which is a creative way of engaging the scriptures. There's Lectio Divina, which is a meditative reading of the Bible. There's music. There's going out into nature. One of the things I found is my body gets in the way. My mind races. My body fidgets. I'm a lot like the dog here who's fidgeting. Now it's kind of quiet, but I'm fidgety. And one of the things that's been very helpful for me to understand in my own spiritual life is that I have to sort of get my body out of the way. And one of the ways I do that is by exercising. So if I'm on my bicycle or if I'm on the treadmill, I can use that very time to pray, or I can pray much better after I've done the exercise. So I'll put on some rock and roll music on my iPod and I'll do my exercising, and then I'm much more able to center myself. my wife jokes that when we go on retreat to an Episcopal monastery, which is one of our ways of really engaging in that silent time, she said the first whole day is just sleeping. You know, you center yourself well enough, and if you've got a sleep deficit, the first thing you do is fall asleep. You know, the body needs to be taken care of. It needs to have sleep and food and exercise, and only then, at least for me, is my spirit set free to engage in the kind of prayer that I want.
That makes sense to me, because my experience of when I had the kind of job that I went to, you know, Monday through Friday kind of job, you know, from this time to that time, I found that on a week's vacation, it took me to day three or day four before I was really even ready to engage the vacation itself.
Mm.
You know, all I wanted to do was to lay around and do nothing. I didn't want to be programmed to do anything, because that's what work was. Go to this meeting, you know, produce this result, fill out these forms, fill out the time card, you know, account for your time. And so the vacation, first of all, was unwinding from all of that. And it took a couple days just to sort all of that out. So one of the things we're thinking about is how it is that we get there,
yeah.
You know, and each of us gets there differently, but it's one of the ways we get there. One of my, and I'm finally learning even not to do a whole lot of reading in this area, is, you know, the people who want to tell you how to pray, how to have this relationship, and, you know, it's do it every day at the same time, and do it for this many minutes, and keep a notebook by you, and take a walk. I always love the ones who tell me to take a walk, you know, and how it will free my mind. And I think to myself, you know, I better pay attention to where I'm going. First of all, I'd pay attention to what the dog is doing, and then I'd pay attention to the traffic, and then I'd pay attention to what street I'm on so I can get back home. That this whole idea of this being restful and an opportunity for God to intrude is like, I don't think so. God may intrude, but a truck may intrude as well. I don't really want to mess with a big tractor trailer as part of my spiritual discipline.
That idea of, you know, each person is different and needs their own way, I think is so important. And it's one of the things that I hope will come out of our planning as we address this as a congregation, is to really help people see that they need to know themselves. What is your temperament? You know, what is your schedule? What is your, how does this really become integrated into your particular life? The challenge is, how do you do programming to help people with that when people are so very different and have different backgrounds and different knowledge base levels and different personalities? So clearly we're going to need a very varied approach as a church as we try to help our folks to engage with this and to find deeper ways of knowing God, different techniques of prayer. My hope is that we'll have over the coming year a number of workshops, retreats, classes, experiences. Because I think you're right. It's not so much what you know about this as just doing it. There's a tremendous amount of knowledge. You could spend your whole life studying prayer, but that's different from actually giving it a shot. We're also a blessing and a curse of the Episcopal Church is our rich liturgical life, our prayer book, which has come down to us from 1549 through several revisions, and we're very wedded to the beautifully resonant language of Episcopal worship. And sometimes people feel, at least in the Episcopal Church, that a prayer doesn't count unless it is a tremendously literary prayer. So my fumbling attempts to speak to God clearly are not very worthwhile, when in fact I find very often those are the prayers that God perhaps values the most. I think of Romans chapter 8. You know, the Spirit, we don't know how to pray as we ought, St. Paul says, but the Spirit himself intercedes for us with sighs too deep for words, and I would get this sense of groans, kind of, sometimes that's all you can say in life is to groan, and that can be a kind of prayer.
One of the things that, well, there have been a couple. One of the things that has really helped in my relationship with God was one of the former associates of this parish prayed with me on a regular basis to say, and the thing that he would tell me is, God has a purpose for your life. And the prayer was, is that God clue me in on what that purpose might be, because it was a mystery for a long time. And I think that that question is still ongoing and being revealed. And maybe one of the things God and I talk about a lot, and maybe talk about forever and ever. Not that my life has no purpose, and not that different things haven't come up, but that for me that's a very important issue in my life is to feel purposeful, and to feel that I'm doing what God would have me do. But so that often when people pray for me, or people pray, or I pray, or as people pray, it's about this whole question of purpose and direction. Because it would seem to me that, that spirituality has a purpose. It just sort of doesn't exist independently. Mm-hmm. And I think thinking about, the eight aspects of church development, passionate spirit, like, well, can we check this one off? can we check this one off? I've just started to read St. Teresa's Interior Castle. And I'm, in the very, very beginnings of reading this. And didn't know if I would be able to, concentrate. It's a book that was written in, 1577. Would we even be able to speak with one another through this book? And I'm finding it's pretty accessible, at least at the beginning stages. I mean, and her imagining is that spirituality is the inward journey. It's going into our own soul to meet God. But her image is fascinating. We call it castle in English. It's more mansion or even just dwelling. But she imagines it as a multi-roomed building, and that the rooms are stacked, one on top of the other, but also side to side. And so that it isn't just one path to the middle. It's not like a labyrinth where you get to the middle by one path. You go through these rooms and you may revisit these different rooms as you're making your way to the center, which is union with God. I mean, that's your goal, is this union. I mean, that's the center of one's prayer, is to be in union with God. And it would seem to me that that's the purpose of worship too. We often do it as a duty. I can check that off my list. I went. Done.
Christian Schwartz says in Passionate Spirituality, the greatest enemy of passionate spirituality is a sense of duty. And we've been kind of struggling with that because duty is a virtue. I mean, it's a good thing in many respects in life to have a sense of duty. Honor, duty, country. I mean, a lot of our civic virtues are dependent on that. But if your whole purpose for coming to church, let's say, or for praying your rosary or whatever, if your whole reason for it is duty, then you're not in that relationship anymore. You're not longing for union with God. You're doing what you were told to do out of a sense of duty. You know, and I think a lot of people do come to church simply out of duty. I promised my mother on her deathbed that I would go to church. I hate church. I don't like the people. I don't like the service, but I go out of a sense of duty. Well, it's going to be very hard for you to grow in that relationship with God because your defenses will be way up. You know, you'll be checking it off the list. But I think there have to be chinks in the armor where God can kind of work in and begin to transform you. I did have an experience in my last church of a person who had lost both her parents very suddenly, both buried in our columbarium, which is a place in a church where ashes can be interred instead of at a cemetery. And she began to come to church basically to visit her parents. That the relationship that she desired was with her parents, and they were dead, and one of the ways she could do that was by coming to church. Well, what happened to her is she began also to form a real relationship with God and with the wider community of that church. It was a small country church. And over time, her coming to church, the reasons kind of changed. It was still to be in communion with her parents, but it was more and more to be in communion with the living God and with this community in which she was getting to know God. And eventually she became a very important leader in that church and grew tremendously spiritually. And so I think God can use sort of whatever we bring to the table to work us into a deeper relationship. Because I think that's what God always wants, is union with us. And that's the good news.
What, at this point, haven't we gone over that we may need to go
over? I guess for us at St. Luke's, the next steps will be a retreat for the whole parish, anyone who wants to come, on Friday night, September 21, and Saturday, September 22, at which those who choose to come will make a promise. They'll promise to be part of that retreat and to be part of the work of Passionate Spirituality during the coming year. In whatever way. It doesn't have to be a huge way. It could be a tiny little piece. But by coming and adding their input into shaping our church response to this area, they will also be making a covenant with the church and with God to kind of follow through, to be a part of the solution. And my hope is that we will all find some ways concretely to begin to work on this and to say, what would it look like? What are the specific steps that we could take as individuals, as a diverse community, to respond to God's invitation for a deeper relationship, to acknowledge that it's God who wants this, and to take some little steps ourselves to respond to that invitation and to grow in that relationship. So a lot of it remains to be seen.
That was my next question was, you know, you said it, this is for this year.
Mm-hmm.
And presumably sometime in the spring, early summer, people will be looking at what the following year will be about, sort of the theme of the year, I guess. You know, how do you know if you're done? I get, you know, not done sounds like the wrong word here, because you're never done with the relationship. But how do you leave, I guess, this emphasis?
That's a good question. This is still a fairly new process for us. As we understand it, what you do each year, each spring, is you take this survey again, the same survey which pointed out Passionate Spirituality as an area of weakness for us. We'll take the survey again in the spring. Hopefully we will have shown some improvement, and we will select the next lowest area of the 8 quality characteristics for our focus for the following year. Not that we will stop doing what we've started with Passionate Spirituality, but that we will add a focus in whatever this next area is, whether it's evangelism or inspiring worship. And one of the interesting things for me is all of these 8 areas are deeply interconnected. You had mentioned that worship and spirituality are intimately connected. And obviously, inspiring worship and passionate spirituality are very much related, so that working on one should have an impact on the other and vice versa. So it may be worship that we're led to focus on next, or it might be loving relationships or holistic small groups. These are all terms for these quality characteristics. And it sort of seems to me in this process that wherever you start, you can get sort of where you're going. It doesn't really matter in the end which one you pick, but the idea is that you're being intentional and focused for a while as a community in lifting up one particular aspect of this Christian life.
Anything else that you just need to say?
No.
Okay.
It's been a pleasant conversation. The coffee is excellent here at the Labyrinth Cafe.
And there we go.
Caitlin's being distracting.
No, this is not Caitlin. This is Elwood.
Elwood, I'm sorry.
Yes,
terrible faux pas.
Yes, my first dog was Caitlin, and this
sorry,
is Elwood.
Elwood.
And not only is one a girl and one a boy, one was a chocolate lab, and this is a yellow lab. So he is often a part of these conversations, even though fortunately he doesn't have a whole lot to say. He wants to communicate greatly.
Yeah, it's tough.
It's very...
Dogs communicate non-verbally so much. It's tough to podcast
a
dog's contribution.
Exactly. But one of the things that I've often thought is that dog spirituality is about being dog. You know, 100% being dog. And this one is a cartoon dog. If you've ever experienced, you know, the way dogs run in cartoons, what they do, this one is it. Whoever drew those initial cartoons to sort of get the classic cartoon dog had a dog just like this one. So, this is Rev Merrill with Father Eric. No, you may not have my coffee. Here at the Labyrinth Cafe, you can contact us by sending us email at thewingedox@gmail.com or visiting us on the web at thewingedox.blogspot.com. And we are wishing you a blessed week.